Time, and thanks for coming. My name is Levent Akil. I work for Software Solutions Group, now with the new name Software and Services Group at Intel. I'm based in Munich, and I'm part of the actually Performance Analysis and Trading Lab. So my team develops a bunch of products within Intel, and yes, Intel develops software actually, and when you talk about Intel, everybody thinks about hardware, but we have a quite big actually, not so big compared to other big players, but still a quite big software division, and my team develops mostly tools like VTune Performance Analyzer or threading tools or things like threading building blocks, TBB, or things like OpenMP runtime for the compiler. And in addition to that, we have new tools now coming up in Parallel Studio, and that's what we're talking about. Before I start, how many of you actually heard about our Intel Parallel Studio before? Okay. Great. And how many of you know about our legacy products like Intel VTune Performance Analyzer? Anybody? Okay, great. What about threading tools like Thread Profiler, Thread Checker? Sometime. What about compiler, Intel compilers? Any of you use Intel compilers? No? Any of you use Intel VTune Performance Analyzer, our legacy tools? So-so? How do you like it? So-so? Usually what happens is in a bigger crowd, I ask, okay, how many, when I go to some talks, I say, how many of you use VTune Analyzer? 10 hands. How many of you actually continue to use it? 5 hands. And then how many of you really like it and understand the results? 2 hands, right? And because it's a really powerful tool, but it's hard to learn. The learning curve, it's not the best user-friendly tool. That's why now we are introducing this Parallel Studio to try to simplify certain things. So for those who came late, you didn't miss too much except the eval CDs, and so we just started. So welcome to How to Leap Over the Parallel Chasm, and this is the first talk I will be giving today, and I will have another talk in the afternoon which will be focusing particularly on one of the tools which is part of Intel Parallel Studio. So I assume most of you actually develop using native programming languages, or how many of you use C++? How many of you use Fortran? 1. Okay, not bad. How many of you use, .NET or mixed mode? Okay. So let me tell from the beginning, this tool, Parallel Studio, is a tool targeted for actual C++ developers using Visual Studio. And we have other legacy tools that cover supports Fortran, C++ on both platforms, Windows, Linux, or macOS. But this particular product, Parallel Studio, is introduced specifically for what we call mainstream developers, C++ developers using Visual Studio. So, when you look at it, what the computers bring today, the opportunities the computers and the architecture or processors or platforms bring to you is vast. And whichever domain you are working in, regardless of it could be CFD, whether life science, finance, web services, doesn't really matter. The whole goal is you have an idea and you want to get that idea into your product or in a software. And the idea is how can you optimize this time between an idea and an actual product, right? You want to minimize that time and then bring that product into the market. So the whole idea is, this is of course maybe technical computing, I don't know what kind of domains you are working in, but the idea is always the same. You have the idea, you create it, you simulate it, you analyze it, you visualize it, and you deliver it. So with the new generation of intelligent processor, we try to speed up this process, right? So that's the whole idea. And when you look at the demand for performance, density, and power, so on the left, maybe this is not so relevant, but if you look at the top 500 supercomputers, you know, where we were in 1993 and where we will be in 2029, you can see that actually right now we are at 1 petaflops, and this will be increasing almost linearly, right, based on the data taken from the top 500. And if you look at the power reduction, so power reduction is not as good as one would hope. So if you remember the gigahertz time frames, right, we basically hit kind of a wall, power wall. We couldn't increase the frequency of the processors. So this was kind of natural for us to say, okay, what can we do? How can we deliver more performance? Because customers before, not optimizing their software, they said, okay, I won't optimize my software. Why should I optimize my software? Because the next generation of processors will have a higher frequency, right? So I will automatically get some boost. But now, the frequency boost of the processor from one generation to another is not as much as it was before. What you have right now is you get more cores. 2 days ago, we just announced like Nehalem processor EX. This is one socket processor with 8 cores in it. And the people will start building, OEMs are building servers based on that. 4-socket will have 32 cores. And when you enable, let's say, symmetrical multithreading, what we call hyper-threading, you will have 64 cores on one box. And now the question is, the challenge is, how do you really, you know, take advantage of or leverage these kind of servers or processors or systems? So I just want to give you an idea of where we are, right? I mean, we started to define it something called tick-tock model. Tick-tock model is what we call like a clock, right? You tick-tock, tick-tock, that's how it works. What we do is, for example, every talk, we deliver a new microarchitecture. Keeping the same microarchitecture, next year, what we call tick, we deliver the same microarchitecture on a newer manufacturing process. So we introduce core 2 microarchitecture at 65 nanometer, and next year we moved into 45 nanometer, right, with paneling core. It's the same microarchitecture. On the following year, this year basically, TOC, where we introduce new microarchitecture. That's called Nehalem. The code name is Nehalem. How many of you heard about Nehalem, actually? Okay. How many of you heard about core 2? Okay. So, Core 2 was the actually very successful processor. It was still front-side based. With Nehalem, we introduced integrated memory controller to the processor, and what we introduced recently, 2 days ago, was the EX version, 8-core version. And now, we already started working on the 32-nanometer process. It is there. It's available. We can simulate applications and already provide to a couple of our strategic customers or OEMs, partners. So 32-nanometer is there. So what we will do is take the same microarchitecture and then shrink it to the 32 nanometer. When we, on the next year and the following year, what we call Sandy Bridge, it will be a totally new microarchitecture and it will be on the 32 nanometer. So every year we introduce microarchitecture, shrink the manufacturing process, and move on to the new microarchitecture. It's like a clock. Sometimes it could be tick-tock, but that's okay. Actually, we haven't done that yet. So far, we are working like a clock, so that's good. I just want to show you a couple of, you know, I know maybe you don't really care about hardware, but I just want to show where we are and where we will be in a couple of years. So this is Nehalem processor. So this is a 4-core version. I just said we have the 8-core version of this one. 2 days ago, we announced it. And this is a Larrabee chip we are working on. Maybe how many of you heard about Larrabee? Okay, more people heard about Larrabee than Nehalem. Interesting. Okay. And so this is, we talk about it, but we don't disclose too much about it yet. So this is, again, a mini-core chip, where we will target mostly graphics initially. And so in addition to that, we just introduced like 3 years ago, demonstrated 80-core chip, the TerraScale project. The idea was not really to show and produce, bring this 80-core chip to the market. The idea was to analyze the current applications. How would they behave on an 80-core chip? How would they scale? What will be, the I/O is going to be like? What are the boundaries? What are the bottlenecks? Okay? So, considering that you have now many core underlying platform or servers and chips, so the question is, how can you come up with dynamically scaling efficient applications? Right, there's a big question in between. And there are many components to that question mark. And when you look at it, of course, operating system is a key. Operating system should be able to provide you enough resources or efficient resources so that your application can scale while other applications might be running at the same time with your application. So the schedulers might really understand how to schedule multiple threads or multiple processes on this course. There are thread-aware execution environments, and probably you are hearing more and more about resource managers. It could be in the OS, it could be in the runtime. With the Visual Studio Dev 10 timeframe, you will have concurrency runtime engines and resource managers. And so those are mostly targeting to handle and provide a better system, underlying system for the multi-thread applications. On the top of the operating system, you have programming languages. Could be native, managed, dynamic, scripting, doesn't really matter. But in addition to the existing languages, there are always new extensions. So OpenMP, for example, is an extension to current C and Fortran. It's not a new extension, but it is always being improved. So we just probably heard about the OpenMP 3.0 spec being released like a couple of months ago. How many of you know OpenMP? Do you know OpenMP? Okay. So OpenMP is an extension to provide easy parallel applications, just to fit a couple of pragmas. In addition to that, there are new languages. So maybe some of you heard about it. We announced a product called Firestorm CT. This is like a new extension to a compiler to provide you a new parallel vector template so you can write, take advantage of the hardware. Whatever it is, things are changing to take advantage of the underlying hardware. Where I'm coming into play is parallel programming tools and techniques. That's where my team is coming into play, and we try to provide these tools to the developers to have dynamically scalable applications to help you to minimize the time to come up from the idea to the time, and how can we ease the adoption of parallelism? Because parallelism is not new. Parallelism has been well studied over 40 years or maybe even more on scientific community and the HPC community. But what is new is now whenever you buy a laptop, you have either dual core or quad core. And your customers or your software vendor or the softwares you run are working towards to take advantage of multi-cores. So let's say you don't have two applications. Probably we are working with Intel, is working with both application vendors or software vendors. We both tell them take advantage of multi-core. So they say, okay, they write their application. So if there are four cores, they create four threads or try to do something else, let's say. And there's another application. We talk to those vendors and tell the same thing. If you put them on the same system, what happens? Oversubscription. How do you get this, prevent these kind of things? Operating system and the resource manager should help you. So we are working with the whole ecosystem, right? We not only provide hardware, but we work with OS vendors and ISVs, independent software vendors, to ease the job of this transition to parallelism. By the way, if you have questions anytime, just stop me and we can try to make it an interactive session. So the idea is how to ease the parallelism, right? Transition to parallelism. That's why we introduced Parallel Studio. Parallel Studio is a Microsoft Visual Studio plugin. It combines three different products, what we call Composer, Inspector, and Amplifier. So I will talk briefly about each products are, and we released this product on May 26th. So you can we work with some of the ISVs very heavily on beta testing and etc. But now it's a real product and you can always go and download or eval. I just give, that's the final product, you can always try. So what is Intel Parallel Studio, right? We try to address four phases in a software development, right? Design. When you're designing a software right now, you either have an application which is already multi-threaded and you want to optimize it so it scales further, or you have a serial application and you want to introduce parallelism. How do you design it? And we have something called Advisor, Parallel Advisor Lite, and which can help you to analyze your code, identify which parts of your code can benefit from parallelism. Because you don't want to introduce parallelism just for sake of introducing parallelism, right? You have to be very careful. And Code and Debug. So basically, Code and Debug provides you compilers and libraries to introduce parallelism. We already had Intel Compiler. I don't know, some of you already heard about Intel Compiler. The main reason we have Intel Compiler is actually not main reason, but three main reasons is performance, performance, performance. So we try to deliver the best performance with Intel Compiler. And we have been doing it for a long time on the HPC and enterprise segment, and we want to bring it to the mainstream. In addition to that, we include like libraries like Intel Performance Primitives. These libraries provide you functions or threaded libraries in different functional domains like audio, video, cryptography, and so on. In addition to that, we introduced something called TBB a couple of years ago. And we also include TBB, an enhanced version of TBB in Composer. In the verify stage, so this is the third stage when you're developing software. You design, you code, and then now you analyze. In a multi-threaded application, there are a lot of actually, due to the non-deterministic behavior of a parallel program, there could be many problems, right? How many of you know what a data race is? Okay, great. And how many of you know what a deadlock is? Okay, great. More people know what a deadlock is. That's interesting. So basically, you have to figure that out, right? How do you figure it? Find the deadlocks and data races is really hard. If you work long in the past writing parallel programs, I remember when I used to write my first parallel applications, I didn't have any tools. I simply put printf in the threads. I'm here, I'm here, I'm there, this is my value, right? And what you do is you totally change the behavior of the application by putting the printf, and you don't have the data race or deadlock anymore. So it is non-deterministic. So how do you find this problem? It's a challenge. So with this Parallel Studio, we try to answer that as well. The fourth stage is amplifier. What we try, amplifier does is try to tune. So you design code, fix the problems, correctness issues, and now you have to tune for best performance. So your application can scale up to 2 cores. You tune it 4 cores. Do you know where it's going to scale further? How can you find out if it is going to scale more or not? Right. These are all the things that you have to consider when you are writing parallel applications. So I want to quickly show how we integrate into Visual Studio. So let's take the screen resolution is small, but I mean, when you install our Parallel Studio products, it's very easy. We basically integrate. We don't have a standalone GUI for these products, and we simply come up, load, like I said, 3 products, Composer, Inspector, and Amplifier. What you see as Intel CC++, that's our compiler. And you see Inspector, Amplifier. In addition to compiler, we also put a toolbar for Parallel Debugger extension, which I will talk about. It's a part of Composer. So it extends the current Microsoft debugger so that you can analyze, debug parallel programs better. And we always have the help file getting started information here if you'd like to find out. So let's look at the code and debug phase. This is basically, if you play with our compiler, if you play with our libraries, nothing is new here. Basically, we take those libraries, enhance them, simplify them for Visual Studio integration, and what you do is you have our well-performing CC++ compiler and advanced threaded libraries. We support OpenMP 3.0 spec, so probably that's the only compiler right now that supports, I shouldn't say only one, but I don't think right now Visual Studio supports it 3.0, and this is the one 3.0 spec was released recently, and we support that. So it's more than a compiler. What we do is it helps you to code in parallel. So our message was always like, okay, think parallel, yeah, great, but doesn't help. How can you code? If you ask me, parallel programming is easy. What is hard is getting it right. Because you can program, there are so many libraries, you can call a library function and makes your application parallel, multi-threaded. But how can you be sure that it's a thread safe? Right? So there are a lot of things there you have to consider. So it helps you to, because our libraries that comes integrated into Visual Studio in addition to compilers, Parallel IPP, Intel Performance Primitives, and TBB. How many of you heard of actual TBB? I asked earlier, but how many of you heard about PPL, Microsoft PPL? Few. So basically, Microsoft PPL is the same idea of TBB. TBB was there a year or 2 years earlier, and we have been working on TBB, and the Microsoft version is PPL, if you know PPL. And on .NET is the test pattern library, basically. It's the same concept. So it's best choice because it's easy to implement parallelism. What are the key features? So the key features is, of course, always the vectorization. So how many of you know what vectorization is? Okay, great. What is the latest vectorization or the SAC version you support? Anybody? Okay, you got a t-shirt. Let's see what I have. Medium. And if you have actually come downstairs, we have more, but I think Edmund will ask harder questions. X large or medium? Okay. So, I mean, actually, not 4.1, but you got close, 4.2 with Nehalem. So, but that's mostly for string manipulation. And so we talk about parallelism, right? And now a lot of people tell the application developers to write parallel code. Well, you put the burden on the application developers. Well, unfortunately, yes and no, because on the hardware side, we are doing a lot of parallelism as well. SAC brings you instruction-level parallelism plus vectorization. You can run multiple, what SAC does is single instruction, multiple data. you can apply a single instruction on multiple data. So it's good for like manipulating the vectors, matrices. So you can reduce the time. We introduced something called language extension for the simple concurrent programming, task complete, pair. I will show some examples. And basically, these are trying to simplify the OpenMP for you. OpenMP, this extension simply wrap what is available in the OpenMP runtime engine. And we introduce VelArray support. If you don't work with, I don't know how many of you know VelArrays or interested in learning more, but that's something which helps you to write vectorized code. C++ Lambda function support is there now, and it is also supported in trading building blocks. 3.0 support, like I said, is there. And of course, we do something which I don't mention here is auto-parallelization. Auto-parallelization is something we have been supporting in Intel compiler for a long time. So what it does is, you know, a lot of developers says, why should I care? Give me a switch which will automatically parallelize certain things for me. It could be, it is possible for data parallelism. Data parallelism is where you have tight loops, right? You split the data among threads. There's a compiler switch you can pass, and if you have, let's say, compute intensive for loops, compiler might be automatically parallelize those for loops for you. And some of the customers actually use auto parallel switch in their production code. They add it to auto parallel. So if you have a native code, try to pass auto parallel and see whether it's going to parallelize your code automatically. What we do is on Windows, we use Win32 threads, automatically create threads for that split the for loop based on the number of cores and create threads for the segments, for the data segments we create. And you can always get more diagnostic information about the threads. QDiag enable thread, and we will give put information, report information about the threads running. So it is, if you haven't used Intel Compiler, we plug in, like I said, to Visual Studio, and it's very easy to select. What you do is you can always select a certain project and say use Intel C++ Compiler, and it will convert the project to Intel Compiler. And then you will start. It's as easy as that. So how many of you actually use Intel Compiler in Visual Studio? None? Okay. And when you look at it, language extensions, we talk about it, task complete, tasks, parallel, critical. I'm not going to talk too much into details, but I want to show you an example for it, what I really mean about these text, these extensions. So you have a function, right? Very simple function. By the way, maybe we talk about vectorization. This is a data parallel code segment for loop. Maybe vectorization will also take place here, by the way, in this for loop. What you do is, in a serial way, you will call this function this fashion, right? In the, by using this task, underscore task, you would basically give the range, and you can call it in this fashion, and it will run two different tasks or threads. As simple as that. But what is basically happening behind the scene is, it's putting an OpenMP pragma, as it is equal to putting an OpenMP pragma at the top of the for loop and splitting that data into number of threads. In this fashion, this is creating two threads. And you can put maybe more, and you can write a dynamic fashion, so it creates as many threads as the number of cores, right? Yes, that's a valid question. That's a valid question. For example, we have you talk about projection. So if this is going to serial code, so the tools I'm going to talk about later can give you this comparison very easily. But like, for example, I talk about vectorization before, and I talk about auto parallel switch. What these do actually, this opens up that details of those switches is when you use these switches, it doesn't automatically vectorize or auto-parallelize. It has a built-in overhead. If it thinks that the overhead of parallelization, meaning creating threads and the synchronization switching between threads and then joining is more than actually keeping it serial, it doesn't do it. There are some heuristics. But that's also this case for you. You don't always want to parallelize every time. So some of you know OpenMP. OpenMP is an open spec. And it's available at openmp.org. 3.0 is just a recent release, the release spec. The major compiler support, Microsoft compiler supports 2.5, and there are a lot of other compilers supporting OpenMP, supporting the runtime. And we have been supporting 3.0 for some time. You have seen the for loop, earlier for loop. So this is basically a data parallel code. What you do is you split the iteration between number of threads. So if you have, let's say, four threads, you split n by four and give that much chunks to each thread. That's how you parallelize. Because in this simple loop, there is no dependency. You can easily do that. So A0 to, let's say, 0 to n divided by 4 is going to be done by one thread, and 0 to n divided by 4 to n divided, you know, the second segment is going to be done by the another thread. And this is simply done by adding just single pragma. You don't have to write any code other than that. Runtime engine will take care of it. Because in the native programming, could let it be Windows 32 APIs or POSIX, whatever you like, you have to add a lot of code in order to manage, right? The whole idea is how to ease the parallelism, and OpenMP is one way to do it. But all of the methods has their pros and cons. I am not saying OpenMP is the solution. Maybe you will prefer a library to do that, right? This is something new introduced in OpenMP. This was supported by Intel compiler for a long time with our own special switches, but we finally managed to get it into the actual public OpenMP spec. So it's task, right? So you create tasks rather than threads, and you can do, let's say, post-traversal, you know, tree traversal here in this very simple fashion. And of course, task at the end joined to the main thread. So there's always an OpenMP is actually very simple. What it does is it creates, whenever it sees the OpenMP pragma parallel for, it creates that thread pool. And the main thread runs serial. Whenever it comes to a pragma section, it schedules these threads from the pool for that particular parallel section region. And then at the end of the, let's say, from the previous example, it creates, let's say, four threads. The main thread comes, schedules four threads. Here, they join, and the main thread continues. So that's why it is very powerful, because you can still keep a lot of things intact and run serially, if you like. We talked about this briefly, and for example, this is almost the same code, right? Dot product. When you look at it, our two parallel switch, auto parallelization switch, which I talked about earlier, automatically parallelizes this for loop for you, so you don't have to worry anything. And what you need to do is basically compile with kubeparallel, and this is showing the command line version. You can do this in Visual Studio as well, and you will get the report, loop was auto parallelized. And of course, does it work on every code? Not really, but there are certain cases where it will work very successfully. And you can always get the increase the threshold. This comes to the question, right? The threshold, the overhead. How many control over which loops to parallelize? So you can basically put the end, define the end, the number of iterations, so which loops you want to parallelize or try to parallelize. Any question on those features? Does it make sense? No? Okay.
There's basically two ways to
use tasks instead of streams. What do you mean by stream?
Normally, if you make something multi-threaded, well, say we have a single process and we speed it up. So what we do is we take a loop or something that takes a lot of time, split it up in threads, return to finish, add the results, and continue. That's one way, but especially if you want lots of overhead, so it's very hard to see if there's an actual benefit. And especially if you go to more cores, so Two cores, yes, four cores. Don't know, more than four cores. I don't see much benefit. So if you want to do that, you need to do a stream processing. So you basically make a workflow. Yeah. You chop it into pieces.
Yeah. So
you put those on the stack.
Yeah. Actually, the threading will work. If you use thread pools, and then if you use 4 to 8, depending on what kind of parallel multi-threaded algorithm you use, it will scale, but not all of them. The same applies for tests that we have something called threading building blocks. It works exactly the way you describe. What it does is it doesn't use threads. I mean, in the application, it uses threads, but what it does, the runtime creates threads based on the number of process, of course, but you create work queues.
Yes.
For each thread, this library creates a work queue. And then what you do is, I will talk briefly actually, you distribute tasks to the work queues of these threads. And then they will run on these cores. And what happens is, if one thread finishes earlier than others, you don't want that particular thread performing the, processing the task to sit idle. It goes and steals from the other work queues. So it does work stealing as well. So that's called threading building blocks. That's what we have, which is part of the composer. And because we know eventually threading has a lot of challenges, and we try to hide it with threading building blocks. And it is actually the next slide, threading building blocks, that I will talk about. No problem, that was timely. So Intel Integrated Performance Primitives is actually a separate product. You can also buy separately. What we did in Composer, we basically combined it with compiler, and basically try to put one kind of solution. What it does is it helps you, it basically provides a lot of multi-threaded functions in many different domains. You see all these APIs in different domains, right? Video coding, audio coding, speech, matrix, signal processing. And we have so many implementations of each domain, which are already threaded. The advantage of it is, if you are doing matrix math, if you are doing fast Fourier transforms or whatever, you don't have to write your own or parallelize your own version. You call this particle library, and it does, and you can control how many threads or parallelism this library should use. You can also control that one. And this supports all Intel processors, and it also runs AMD. Yeah.
With respect to this slide, you're placing the IUP on top of the OpenMind binaries.
Yeah.
With the Microsoft types of libraries, the IUP library, but Microsoft is pushing in parallel. Are they also running towards optimized binaries for Intel?
Oh, I'm not sure. I mean, I wouldn't know, but what these libraries do, that was a good question, actually. And what we do is we create the binary. So we detect by using CPU ID what kind of CPU we have, Pentium 4, Core 2, Nehalem. And then we use the specific version optimized for that particular library, and that's what we do. And I'm not sure whether Microsoft or any operating system vendor is actually doing anything, the hardware vendor specific or CPU specific binaries. But I'm sure in the, for example, memcopy or other things, they're optimized for, let's say, x86, right? And they're for Intel or AMD.
The detection of the number of processors, is that dynamically?
Yeah. So that's a very good question. Intel, actually, IPP library uses OpenMP, so for threading. So if you call, let's say, FFD function, or let's say matrix multiplication, it automatically detects how many cores and creates that many threads. But the problem is nested parallelism. So the place where you're making the function call, if you already have four threads or four processes doing the same thing, and library will create more threads, now you have oversubscription. So you can control how many threads the library creates, either in the by APIs or by the environment variables. Because there's an OpenMP environment variable you can set to tell the libraries or OpenMP runtime engine how many threads to use. Okay? Yeah, so that's a good question. And schedulers are now much more improved than they were 5 or 7 years ago when the first HD and hyper threading came. Now schedulers can try to keep the same process, the thread to the same core, but you can also use the affinity. You can pin certain threads to a certain core. It's a best effort. I think in the earlier versions, I'm not sure how Windows 7 is going to implement that. I heard that actually it might do guarantee on certain cases. So basically, you can keep a certain thread in certain core, so your cache keeps warm, your data sets keeps warm. So you don't have to, because the problem is, you have a thread, brings the data from memory to cache, and it now time's up, OS has to schedule that thread to a different core. What happens is, all the cache in your data set remained here. And if this is a problem, if they're not sharing the cache. If they're sharing the cache, it's not a big problem. But if you think about an 8-core processor we just released, it's not a big problem because they will be sharing the same L3 cache, which is 24 megabyte. So this is the threading building blocks. And basically, it creates it's a C++ runtime library. It's, if you have program, you know how to program using STL. This is basically, this wouldn't be too foreign to you. It will be really easy to adapt. And the idea is to take the notion of scaling from the, as a burden from the developers, but put it into library. Intel developers actually takes the burden, creates these libraries, which will forward scale, right? And it supports nested parallelism, so we know how many threads created and then create the, assign these logical tasks to the threads so that you wouldn't create oversubscription. It's a runtime library. We have books actually from O'Reilly, and we have actually got a lot of awards. And it is committed to one thing key is compiler independence, processor independence, and OS independence. So what I mean by that is it is not specific to Intel compiler. So you can install, for example, Intel Composer, still continue to use Microsoft Visual Studio Compiler, but use TBB. That will be perfectly okay. Yes? Yeah, you can work. Of course, we on what we use POSIX would work. So basically, you have, for example, I will show in the next slide. These are the templates we provide. So, for example, doesn't really matter you have POSIX or whatever. If you call TBB's parallel 4, it will basically create a threaded version of or multitask, logical task assigned to these threads. It will create a parallel version of the 4 or reduce. So it will work. And so this is actually a good starting for this slide. We have generic parallel algorithms, right? For, reduce, do, pipeline, sort, scan. So we provide all parallel version for these particular algorithms. We have concurrent containers, hash map, queue, vector. How many of you actually use STL containers? Okay. Are STL containers thread safe? Do you know? No. If you have to use the STL containers in a parallel threaded application, what happens? You have to protect the containers, right? And what happens is STL containers itself becomes the bottleneck after some time if it is not written well. So we try to learn from others, and that's why we try to implement lockless versions of some of these, for example, vector queue and hash map, and try to provide this so that they would scale. And of course, there are a lot of research going on in the background. And what I would recommend is what I didn't mention: threading building blocks is actually open source. If you go to threadingbuildingblocks.org, you can look at the source and implement your own way. I have a lot of customers which their mutex implementation or their locking mechanism didn't scale for more than 4 cores. I recommend, why didn't you look at TBB and you use it if you like. They said, well, we won't use it. We invested so much. Well, good or bad, doesn't really matter. They learned and implemented their own. Of course, but you can get the free GPL and the licensed version, so non-GPL. So you can have both. You can look at the source and learn from it. Task scheduler, like I said, we create logical tasks, right? And these tasks are assigned to these threads to be executed. And we have our own task scheduler. It's basically non-preemptive. We try, because when you do a compute CPU-bound task, it brings all the data to cache, and time is up. You're scheduled out, right? What happens, your data you're in the cache, you have to bring it again. This task scheduler try to schedule these tasks again and again to the same place. So it has some awareness right there. Synchronization primitives, we have a lot of actually scaling and non-scaling, easy to use, so they have, we have a chart. If you go to a website, tradingbuildingblocks.org, you will find out pros and cons of each locking primitives. What I want to mention is something, the memory allocator. If you write multi-thread applications, how many of you know if malloc, how malloc operates? So good. I mean, when you run malloc, it has to synchronize at that point. So that will be your point right there. It won't scale. It's not a scalable allocator right now, whatever it comes with the standard runtime. So what we try to do is provide an allocator, and then which would scale. So of course, if you know, as a lot of people, rather than creating malloc over and over in different threads, what you do is one thread creates a huge chunk of memory and gives a pointer chunks of that to different threads. The problem is bookkeeping, right? You have to take care of it. This library tries to do this automatically. But if you have done such solution, the problem, what is the problem on NUMA system? Non-uniform memory access. This is what the Nehalem is. So now the problem is you have a local and remote memory, right? You allocate on this local memory, you distribute a pointer to the remote ones, and this memory will be a remote one to this one. So it won't scale also. So there are always pros and cons, and memory could be one of the key factors for your application not to scale.
How about local storage?
Yeah, storage is also...
For example, if you library from VFS, things, yeah, okay, not Intel, but yeah, if you want to run the tasks,
So actually, we don't recommend optimizing for cache. So level one or level two is really hard to optimize. I mean, you try to reduce your cache misses, but for example, our level one and level one cache for data and instruction remain the same from core two to Nehalem. We didn't change it. It's the same.
Larby? It's not learned how it will work, but I'm pretty sure it will have local storage for each processor core.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're lost in traffic, so to
say. Yeah. But I wouldn't comment too much on Larby now, so, but we can talk about more. Yeah. Okay, so one thing which is it could be hard to see, so it is very easy to basically, the problem with using the libraries is adding the right include path, the right library path, how do you manage them, which library groups. So we added basically a configuration. If you want to use IPP libraries, you select IPP library and use TBB. By clicking these, the paths and everything will be defined automatically for you in the project. So you don't have to worry about setting different things. And so we try to ease the adoption of these libraries. Yes. So let me clarify again. We have Composer. Composer is one of the three products of Parallel Studio: Composer, Inspector, Amplifier. Composer has compiler, Intel performance primitives, and threading building blocks. So it's compiler and the other two different separate independent libraries. Because one of them is for task and threading building blocks, just for creating parallel application, task-based. The other is providing you multi-threaded libraries for different domains in audio, video, and speech recognition. And we also introduced something called Intel Parallel Debugger extension. The key features are basically Visual Studio Debugger is great. So we don't want to write a new debugger, right? So what we try to do is how can we enhance or help the people developing parallel code get a debugger. So we try to provide you a shared data access detection. This is basically detecting race conditions, right? And re-entering function detection. And we provide enhanced OpenMP3 support. What I mean by that is, I will show you in the, actually, I will go forward. Here, it is, when you're debugging threaded application, it's really hard, right? When you stop, break, The threads stop usually at different locations. So what we try to do is we try to synchronize them, and you know, you run it in parallel and stop them at sync points, and you can increment them at the same time and then follow how they, you know, function. So let's go back. And race condition, how does Intel Parallel Debugger helps you? You know, you can always go to debug and then thread data sharing problem, and you can enable the detection. And this will help you to detect data race conditions. This is, you can serialize parallel sections to debug further. And I have just one quick simple demo. No, not this one. Let's open the other one. So by the way, I wanted to show you this one more thing before I show you the data race thing. We have examples under our product. You will find the same implementation, the serial app, where is the serial is here, serial version, and you will see the parallel implementation of that using STL, TBB, TPB, and Lambda functions, using Windows 32 API threading, and OpenMP version. So you can get the idea of which, you know, how to use different programming methods. So here, basically, what I will do is I will comment this out. We are basically protecting this shared variable so that they don't increment, that there's no data race condition. So by doing this, I create a race condition. What you do is, now, by the way, I'm using Intel compiler, so you can see from the icon. We add another option here, enable parallel debug checks, yes. And I enable that, and let's rebuild it. What I do is I enable basically thread data sharing detection. It says stop on thread whenever this problem happens. So let's run it. Now it stopped, and it's pointing me to where threads, two threads. This is a dual core laptop, two threads, right? One of them is reading, the other is writing. So there's a sharing problem, right? And you can continue. And by the way, you can also get the call stack, right? You can see, actually, if this is easy in this one, but. And you can get every time, it could have been a different variable. You would have seen it listed here. And let's keep going, and then. So basically, that's what we do. Let's turn it off. And then once you identify if it is coming the same, you can always turn it off. Yes. So yeah, I mean, you will see in Inspector. Inspector does more sophisticated analysis of this one. You can always get read-write, write-read, and read-read is not so much problem, but still will be flagged if you want it. So this uses the, of course, at the source instrumentation. We instrument during the compilation, and then we know and call, send an exception. That's when the debugger stops it, catches and stops it. Okay, so we only talk about data races, but parallel programming is, I would say, easy, but not getting it hard is right, but you can say it is hard. There are a lot of challenges. How many of you remember the Mars Pathfinder project? You remember, right? And if for those who remember, actually, it was a really interesting one. And very interestingly, somebody in his blog, he wrote it on his, you can find the sources here. When the Pathfinder, in the media, it was always covered as software glitches, right? Software glitch causes Pathfinder to reset or, you know, get locked and whatever. And finally, that was a blog, and NASA was not really commenting on it. And then after this blog, NASA said what really happened. But you can find on research.microsoft.com, he actually come up with a really good explanation of what was happening. So it was basically a threat priority inversion problem. So they had three different groups of threads with different priorities, and like one collecting data, one processing it, and one sending the data. And the lower priority thread was blocking the higher priority thread from doing stuff, and then it was basically causing a reset, timing out and reset. So some, you know, correctness issues. So it took only 18 hours to fix the problem, but it took almost 3 weeks to find it. So how could you find such problems? It's very challenging, right? The other one is Northeast blackout. How many of you remember this one? So, you know, Northeast was basically in dark, right? These are showing the satellite images. It's maybe not really easy to see, but basically there was a task force trying to identify what really went wrong. What they did is, ultimately, they kind of blamed the Ohio Energy Company for not trimming the trees so that they were, you know, causing problems. But what happened is, when the problem happened, there was a backup system or a system which was supposed to detect the problem and send a warning to the other energy plants. But actually, it did send a warning to other plants, but because they were never really able to test this before, the message they sent was actually corrupted due to a race condition. Because multiple threads were at the same time, the data they sent as a warning was corrupted, the other systems never really understood what was happening. So it was a software bug, basically a data race. And it wasn't on a Windows system, it was on a Unix system, but nonetheless, data races can happen anywhere. So that's why verifying the correctness of your parallel application is very easy. It's really hard, it's non-deterministic. If you are a software vendor, probably if you write parallel application, you send a software to a customer, customer says it doesn't run, it generates wrong results, and you scratch your head, it works on my system. Right, this is a classic developer, I mean, we all gave that answer. It works on my system, it works on my validation system, but probably the customer is a slightly different configuration, different frequency, something else running in addition to your application causes different timing, right? How do you verify those? So that's why we have the second product of Parallel Studio, which is Inspector. It's inspecting multi-threaded issues. Inspection of databases, deadlocks, and privacy issues. It's the only, actually, in addition to detecting threading issues, what we added new, which we never had this product before, because we had something called Threat Checker, Intel Threat Checker. It was finding databases and deadlocks. So we took that technology and put it into, and simplified and enhanced it in terms of engine, and put it into Parallel Inspector. But additionally, we add Memory Checker. So you have one product which does memory checking for logical, arithmetic, whatever you like, leaks, and uninitialized, I can't count them. But in addition to that, you have the thread checker. It easily helps you to find parallel programming issues, right? And it provides root cause analysis of the issue. It takes you to the source line. So in the Visual Studio, it takes you to the source line where the problem is happening. Again, it's very easy to locate. This is the toolbar enabling. You can always enable the toolbar. And it gives you two options, check for memory errors, check for threading errors. And for each, you see memory and threading, we have four different level of analysis. Because we do binary instrumentation, we instrument the binary. Unlike the parallel debugger you have seen earlier, which basically stops at the source line, right? That was the source instrumentation. We use binary instrumentation. So we analyze the binary and all the libraries you are using. The other doesn't really analyze libraries, it only analyzes your code. The power of this one comes because you are using some probably third-party libraries. How many of you know for sure they are thread-safe? You don't know, right? You take the chance, or if you call them, use those libraries from multi-threaded environment, how do you guarantee? The beauty of this binary instrumentation, it takes the binary, instruments every threading API, creation, deletion, synchronization, and every memory read and write, and then we can tell you so much information. But of course, binary instrumentation has overhead, right? And these 2x, 20x, you see based on the analysis you are performing, you can see the overhead as well. Overhead of slowdown. Yeah, we will analyze libraries as well, instrument the libraries as well.
Doesn't matter which technology you change, they
usually implement. As long as they are following the standard DLL or whatever, you know, formats, COF, whatever, then we will instrument. Of course, in order to, we will show in the call stack, we will show there's a problem in this library or your call stack. You're calling this function and here's the stack, this is where the problem is happening. But if you don't have the source and symbols, we can only tell you so much about that. Yeah, yeah. I don't know, to be honest. I wouldn't say whether we increase or decrease the chance of likelihood. What I will tell you one thing, we will only analyze the code path your code executes, right? Because we wouldn't know any code segments which you are not really analyzing. If you have dead code path which you're not running for that particular run, we wouldn't know about it. But we are using, you can find the paper, the technology we use in the IEEE website. There's a paper and which we describe the algorithm. You can always look at it. And likelihood of having it, I don't know. But the beauty of this is you have a multi-threaded code, you have a single core machine. Data race won't happen if you run it real time. This is about projection. If you take that application, run it on a single core, we will detect that problem. So that's the beauty of it. Okay. Okay. And you had it too, one question. Yes. So we have recommendation here, you know, we use what kind of switches will help. We recommend debug because we have an overhead, let's say 10x of overhead compared to debug. And if your release version is 10x faster than your debug version, then now you have a 100x of slowdown, right? So could be possible. So that's why we recommend with switches to get the best result here. So two powerful memory and threading analysis, each has their own different levels. For example, threading default will look for deadlocks and data races. Memory will look for any memory leaks. And then we increase the stack depth we analyze, and we increase the, you know, other parameters, so we do more true analysis. You can control, I talk about it, and you can always suppress the problem. If you think something is a false positive, or if you don't care about those race conditions, whatever we are reporting, you can always suppress those. And one thing is we also provide, in addition to the command line, we also have, in addition to Visual Studio, we have a command line version, which you can integrate into your validation QA or whatever. So if you have build system, you can use the command line, and then compare two builds. Nightly builds to each other, what has changed. And we have the command line for actually for the next product, Amplifier, too, so you can see the performance differences or concurrency differences as well. So I'm not going to go too much into detail what each level is. I'm sure you can always read later or on the documentation or on the web. But we talk enough about it, actually. It does, it's for, again, C++ application, locate large variety of memory and resource problems, leaks, buffer overruns, stack overruns. And for example, we have four levels. These all three works on the heap. The fourth one works on heap and stack. So we report heap and stack problems. And you can always prioritize the problems. And this is how we will display the problems. You will get the allocation size, the problem, the source, where it is happening. You will get the summary of the subsets, which functions, which modules has it. You can always filter. And then here's the source. You can always double-click on the source and go to actual, if you have the symbols, of course, you can double-click and go to the actual file and the source. And threading analysis is the same. We talked enough about it, right? Data races, deadlocks, four levels. And it's the same way, similar GUI. And again, filtering is here. You see basically here two threads. Right, either some dependency problem, read-write or write-read or write-write. And so let me show you quickly. So these examples come with actually Parallel Studio, so you can always play with these examples. So let's rebuild this one just to make sure. Let's make sure my parameters are correct. Okay. So we are going to analyze for threading. I know this has threading problems. And so I will simply say inspect. Yes. By the way, we use a technology, like I said, minor instrumentation. The tool is called PIN. PIN is actually also publicly available, but we enhance it internally. It instruments injects code on the fly. You can use actual PIN to write your own tools as well. It's available. So you can play, and I want to see whether I have a deadlock or data race. So as you can see, we are instrumenting the libraries that are being used. Okay, so we found it. So we are analyzing it. So real time, we provide real time information. This is one of the key features, because since we have some overhead, you don't want to wait for the application to finish to analyze. We report back to the GUI in Visual Studio some real time information. Oh. They had set it to 12. That's why it's taking long. So what you do is you get the errors. Let's finish this one. So you'll get remarks for every thread creation as well, so we know which threads are created. So let's interpret the results. You get some pop-up. So you get the actually overview, problems of data race. There's a read happening here. There's write, and there was a write again, right? And you can always go to details. You can get the filtering here. This is our problem. I want to filter by data race, and I go to source. You can see two threads. One is writing, one is reading, and you can always get the call stack, how those threads, basically, if there was a deeper call stack, you would see it here, and how you reach that particular data race problem. And you can always change it on the fly, and then run it again. So this is basically, we can put, so OpenMP, I mentioned OpenMP is easy. So what you can simply do is add a pragma OpenMP critical. So this will cause the next line, next section to be critical code segment. So there will be only one thread accessing that one. Critical as a whole overhead compared to other things. So, but you can define it atomic because this is a simple increment. So you can define it as atomic as well, which has less overhead compared to critical. This is important. When you write scaling multi-thread applications, what kind of locking mechanism you use is going to be important. Do you go to kernel for locking, or do you stay in the user space? If you go to kernel, there's a huge overhead for going to kernel. But you can use the kernel locking mechanism for IPC, inter-process communication as well, but not the user level. So there's always pros and cons. Okay. I have 5 minutes to go, I think, right? Or 7 minutes. Okay, six. I'm running. Okay, I'm almost done. So we talk about the correctness issues, right? The challenges for having a deterministic parallel application, but there are also performance challenges. And what are those? Parallel overhead, right? You create threads. Creating threads is a overhead. Synchronization between or scheduling these threads are overhead. Synchronization, excessive synchronization between threads. So if you have a shared variable within a for loop, let's say, which you do 1,000 times, and in that for loop, if you protect that shared variable with a lock, every time you go through iteration, it will do a lot of scheduling. That will create excessive scheduling, right? So that's a problem. Load imbalance. Load imbalance is improper distribution of the parallel work. You have a 8 CPU-bound threads working on a chunk of data, computing some, you know, numerical algorithm. If one thread is done working on a very small set of data, and then it is done, and the other thread is doing most of the work, there will be a load imbalance. How do you find these issues? Load imbalance will prevent you to scale from, let's say, 4 to 8, 8 to 16, right? And some algorithms, you cannot avoid load imbalance issues. If you look at some, for example, numerical analysis type like Gauss matrix multiplication or vector, let's say Gauss elimination by doing backward substitution. So you may create an upper level triangle, which one is zero and one has values, and you walk upwards, right? And if you split each row to a thread, the lowest one will do work on very little data. So that creates load imbalance. How do you balance that? You have to choose the right algorithm and write threading methodology. Granularity versus scalability. Granularity is the ratio of computation to communication, right? And this is a bigger problem for distributed system for message passing interface. If you use MPI or this in a shared memory, it's not a big problem, but how much time you spend in computing something versus communicating. So this is a big problem also. So that's where the Intel Parallel Amplifier comes into play. That's the fourth stage, tuning. It's again, it's the third tool of Parallel Studio. It integrates into Visual Studio like the others and aids developers understand an application parallel behavior. Not only parallel behavior, but also serial behavior. Because you have a serial application and you want to introduce parallelism. How do you do it? You don't just introduce parallelism anywhere you like or anywhere you think is, you know, appropriate. Because you want to introduce parallelism wherever the hotspot is, wherever you spend most of your clock ticks, right? You just don't want to introduce somewhere because it won't benefit. So what we do is we provide three different analyses. One is hotspot, so it tells you very simply where your app is spending most of the time, and concurrency analysis where and when are the cores are idle, when the cores are idle. So it will show you have a function. You think it is parallel, but it is not running concurrently on the cores. It's running only on one core. The other threads are maybe waiting for something. Locks and wait analysis, where are the bad I/O waits or lock waits, or where do you wait? So, for example, you create 10 threads, and the main thread creating them is waiting them, right? Yes, that's, you said wait on single or multiple, you wait on it, and you can find how much time you wait on those particles, or how much time you wait on a I/O or a sleep or a different thread. You can find all that information. And like inspector, we can always show the problems on the source line. You go to source line, that particular function, and how much time it is taking. And the, another feature is comparing the results. When you are doing optimization or benchmarking, you have a baseline. You usually, we recommend, not usual, but you should come up with a baseline. Come up with a baseline, do your changes, compare your changes to the baseline. How do you compare? Right? That's why we provided this easy functionality. Again, I won't spend time. It's the toolbar is enabled there. We provide three different analyses in profile button. You have hotspot, concurrency, and locks and waits. Live locks, you will, I mean, of course, no process will may be able to make process in a live lock situation, but if the application never comes back, you have to kill it, then we will show the results where you wait. But locks and waits is not for a deadlock. But if that lock happens, if you are waiting on a synchronization object, we will, that time will show up there.
It's better tool than
VTune? Good question. So for those who know VTune, the question was, is it better tool than VTune? Depends. If you only need concurrency analysis or hotspot, just show me where my hotspot is. This is the tool. If you want to see, okay, where's my hotspot? Does my hotspot cause any cache miss? Where are my branch miss predictions? What are my stall cycles in the processor? This tool won't be able to answer that. VTune will be able to answer that one. And if you are using .NET, right, in addition to native, VTune is the tool. This only right now supports CC++. But of course, .NET supporting version is coming up. But VTune is GUI-wise not the most user-friendly GUI, but it's a very powerful tool if you know how to use it. If you understand from the microarchitecture, I would say go with VTune. If you don't care about the architecture, if you want to see where's my hotspot, where my cores are idle, if my functions are multi-threaded and utilizing the cores efficiently, go with this tool. Okay. So my next session is actually more detailed amplifier talk, but I will just again show something very quickly. What should I show? Okay. So here, let's look at this one. Okay, let's analyze this, let's rebuild this one. Now we want to analyze it. So here are the options, right? So amplifier, I want to do, just to let you know, I'm sure you know it, if I say click profile here, it will go to the default startup project. So in order to, if you have multiple projects, you have to be, so hotspot analysis, let's analyze it. Here are my results. So this particular function where I spend most of the CPU time, right? And it's a clear look. It also clearly tells you that if you want to parallelize or introduce threading, this is the function where you should introduce. Okay, so I think we finished our time. I will quickly wrap up. And so here's where you can get the call stack. And I will have it, my next session, actually, I will go into more detail and amplifier to find a hotspot, loading balance issues, and then how the compiler can help you to get better threading performance. So that's what I will talk in the session. Edmund in the back and has eval CDs if you like. And also some, you can win a laptop from him. And if you like. And so here's the summary, right? We are committed to providing the software community with the tools and easy transition to parallelism. Intel Parallel Studio is designed to help you guys to make this transition easier. Now, we announced the product on 26th as a product, May 26th, 3 days ago, or 2 days ago. And you can always check our forum. There's a lively forum. It's a community-supported product as well. So you can always find more about it. And I'll be here in the afternoon, and I'll be here the rest of the day if you have more questions. So, thanks.